everybody. It's Mary Lou Tyler. This week's guest is Kendra Lee of the KLA Group. Now, I've followed Kendra, gosh, has it been like 20 years? Could that be right, Kendra?
It absolutely could be.
It could be. Okay. Yes, because I remember when I first signed up, I had a project management company called Telegenic. And my first newsletter came from you on that email address. So that's a long time ago. Kendra is the founder and president of KLA Group out of Denver. And she is a great resource if you need any type of sales and lead generation or training, and specializing top of funnel mostly, prospecting. I'll let her talk more about all of that, but she's a great resource. And like I said, I've had her newsletter. She does a weekly tip, and then I think a bi-monthly newsletter that get on her list. There's such great tips in those, especially if you're into anything to do with business development. You definitely want to follow Kendra. Welcome to the podcast today, Kendra.
Well, thank you. And what a lovely introduction. That was really nice. Thank you.
Oh, my pleasure. I am a fan.
It's hard to know that we go back 20 years, though.
I know. Isn't that crazy? Yes. Yes. So we were talking about, you know, if you're listening to this, it may be post-COVID, which is the 2020 event that we're all going through. And we were talking about, you know, should this podcast be geared towards that? But I wasn't sure if we're going to be out of the woods by the time this airs or not. So what I wanted to do, what I asked Kendra to talk about, are those habits or those workflows or those type of tools and things that you can do on a daily basis that would prepare you for something like this, event like this, or we were talking about even if your CEO or your director of sales comes in tomorrow and says, hey, we're going to now focus in this vertical. So you have to pivot over that way to the right instead of, you know, where you had been, the lane you were in yesterday is no longer the lane. And so we're kind of experiencing that. And the beauty of this, as Kendra was saying, is, you know, the business doesn't really change because if you have the sales conversations, the skills, the habit, the workflow down, then you can take any type of punches that come your way. So Kendra, let's start by demonstrating to the folks on that are listening the types of work that you have been doing with clients and why that work is so important in terms of repeatable, consistent delivery.
Well, we work on two sides with clients. One is with the sales teams mm-hmm. on their prospecting, and the other is with the marketing side on running the lead generation activities that drive a portion of the leads the sales team wants to follow up on.
Nice.
So, you know, both of those activities do prepare you for having to pivot. Because if you already have, on, let's say, the marketing side, a consistent communication method that you're using, then mm-hmm. it's a matter of changing your message, right? I mean,
right.
That's what we've had to do in the last month for all the clients whose lead gen we're managing. We've had to go and switch what we're talking about, but we already had the people we were talking to. We already know what our business is. We're just shifting how we're talking about it.
Uh-huh.
And then you look on the sales side, and the same thing is true for reps. I mean, if you're already prospecting, and you have a prospecting discipline, then it's just a matter of saying, okay, how do I switch up my approach to whatever this new lane, as you called it, may be?
Mm-hmm.
But we're still doing all the same things. We're just switching what we're talking about, really.
Right. Now, but we also, with this particular event, one of our main channels, i.e. for some people, the telephone, has been significantly reduced in terms of results. So are you saying that we not only do we have our sales message and our method and we are contacting, but is there also this sort of leveraging the different technologies and pulling the different levers when you start to see something like what we're experiencing now, where some people are scrambling, but because some people have covered the both sides of the umbrella, like you with marketing, with lead gen, and then there's a prospecting arm. So there's leads coming in, but there's also outbound prospecting going out. Is it a matter of balancing the different channels? How does that work?
Yes, I think it's a matter of using the different channels that are available to you. Mm-hmm. I am a firm believer that you have to pick up the phone, so I'll never say don't use the phone.
Right.
Now, will our success be the same? Maybe, maybe not. It depends on who our target market is and how they have handled having to, you know, move to a new environment, in this case, working from home. So if they're transferring their phones, great, we'll get them. Still, what we want to do then is say, okay, if I can't reach them by phone, what are other ways I can get them?
Yeah.
So we know we can get them by email. Well, we've seen this surge in people who are using LinkedIn. Mm-hmm. So we had one rep who said, man, we need to be doing lots more on LinkedIn because I know I have my LinkedIn open and when I get bored, that's where I go.
Right.
So, you know, knowing as we do when we're trying to scope out how to reach a prospect, knowing what the prospect might be using and paying attention to right now. So mm-hmm. using other channels like email, like LinkedIn, what about video and sending a video email? That's another way.
Right.
If you and your database have cell phone numbers and the people that you are targeting are the type that you should text. You're not going to call their cell, but you could text. So there are definitely different approaches. And I look at it as we have to put on our creative hats and say, well, if we couldn't have normally reached somebody by the phone, what would we have done? Well, mm-hmm. we might have tried Dropbys. We still would have tried email. We might have tried LinkedIn. So we just have to start thinking more broadly about how we could potentially reach them.
Exactly.
A fun tidbit for you, because reps have, in many cases, they're spinning, trying to figure out, well, you took away my primary way of reaching people. Now what do? We actually wrote up 60 different ways that you could prospect remotely because people were just like stuck. So I think when you have to pivot, it's stepping back and putting your creative hat on and saying, wait a minute, at its fundamental, this is still prospecting and lead gen.
Mm-hmm.
How else might I reach somebody?
That's a great point. And I, you know, the other thing is I'm curious when you set up clients and you're working on getting the campaign, for lack of a better word, together. Would these ideas about these channels come up as you're defining the personas, the people with whom the audience that you're going to be having these conversations with? Isn't part of that talking about how they consume information and how, you know, in this case, that's going to switch when one thing gets taken away, which is not going to the office anymore. So you're kind of covered there too, because I would imagine that you have this list of checklist about, okay, who's the audience? How do they consume information? Where do they like to hang out? You know, what types of challenges are they experiencing that we can solve for them? So there's like a whole checklist you go through in the form of a buyer persona or a prospect persona that would have that channel information on it as well, correct?
Absolutely. You have identified who is the target persona,
mm-hmm.
a little bit of background about them, and what is the best way to reach them. The things they care about may shift. So it depends on why you've been asked to pivot. You know, we use COVID-19 as an example. Well, mm-hmm. everybody in the world was asked to pivot. But you know, we see pivoting happen all the time. Think about compliance. All of a sudden, a government entity comes out with a whole new set of requirements. And if your target market has to achieve those, all of a sudden what that persona cares about has shifted because of the new compliance regulation.
Right. The most recent one, GDPR in Europe.
Yes.
You know, it limited our ability to send emails unless they're opted in. Websites had to let them know that they have cookies and all of that good stuff.
Exactly. So, right.
Yeah.
And, and all companies in Europe actually had to respond to that. So if you had anything at all to do with GDPR from the business perspective, and that's what you were calling people about, it gave you a whole nother topic to talk about, and then you just apply that to the persona and why they would care about it.
Right. Has the, in events like this, when we are losing or we have a channel that's not as effective, is it customary that you amp up other channels, or do you typically keep the touches similar? What are you finding when we have these types of events?
What we have something that we call a bloodhound follow-up strategy to gain access to new prospects. And it follows that rule that we've all heard, that it's going to take a minimum of 9 attempts to reach someone.
Yep.
And it uses a combination of approaches to reach a prospect over a 31-day period.
Okay.
And when we stepped back to look at, okay, now everything has shifted, we can't necessarily reach people as easily through the phone, how does that change our approach? The number of touches did not change. The frequency of touching did not change, because we're still trying to reach people.
Yeah.
And we still want to have a valuable conversation. And ideally, we still want to sell something, although the way we approach it is going to be softer right at the moment.
Yes.
So our frequency and number of touches did not shift. What shifted is what we were using, the approaches. The phone is still in every one of them,
mm-hmm.
because you can still reach some people. And to your point, with GDPR, either we're going to have to get them through something like LinkedIn, or hopefully we were able to access them through email prior, that we have their permission.
Right.
Otherwise, now we're trying to attract them through things like search engine marketing.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So
exactly.
The phone is still there. Email is there. We increased LinkedIn. So we changed up how we were using different strategies and at which time.
Yep.
But kept the number of touches and the frequency.
Okay. And we did something very similar. As you know, I'm on hiatus for a couple of years here working with one client, which has been a blast. But what we're doing is we're leveraging the technology that we have to only schedule phone calls for those people who have engaged with our email content or our social content. So if we see them click through, for example, to some type of URL or paper or downloadable something, then that's ticked in the software to say, hey, this person has engaged. I'm going to put them in your calling queue for you now. So, which usually what we used to do is touch two would be a phone call for all the people that are members of our sequence or our, you know, whatever we're doing. And now it's like, no, we don't need to reach all 100. What we'll do is only talk to those people who have engaged, which brought that, you know, 90 some odd number down to something like 40. Which is much more manageable, and it's probably smarter to do anyway. So it's forced us to really think about strategically how to have these conversations, when to have these conversations. And the other thing, the beauty of that is that we pick up where the content asset left off. So if we know they watched a webinar, we pick it right up from there in our next conversation with them.
Exactly right. And those we refer to as marketing qualified leads,
mm-hmm.
because they have engaged with you in another manner, social or your web content, as you said. And now we know what they're interested in.
Yes.
So we can have a different level of conversation with them.
Mm-hmm.
Now we're calling to find out, well, are they interested in just finding out about it? Or are they interested in actually do something about right. that topic?
Yes. So it's just a beautiful thing to think about. It's a warmer conversation. So from a psychological mindset point of view, you're already beyond the cold process. And, you know, we're taking off where the prospect is in his mind, you know, where he's at in his mind is where we start the conversation. So it's just, it's a more synergistic way of having conversations with prospects. And it's funny. It's just, it's great that this has happened in so many ways, because we have had to think about the implication of what this means for revenue, for, you know, goals, for opportunities that we're trying to generate, for appointments we're trying to set. And it's really opened up a wonderful brainstorming among at least my team has come up with some great things to do, some fun work from home campaigns to get end users activated and joining in the conversation. And I think a lot of it is the cultural thing of, you know, we're stuck in our house now and we still crave the connection in some fashion, you know? So it's been really a great experience in so many ways.
One thing I would share, mm-hmm. think about is when we are watching what prospects are clicking on or paying attention to in social,
mm-hmm.
we use Twitter as an example.
Right.
If somebody has clicked through, let's say you've written a fabulous blog post and you posted it on Twitter and they clicked through and you can see that, know that when you call, they may or may not remember your name.
Mm-hmm.
And so the advantage that you have is that that person, you know, cares about a specific topic, and it's not as critical that they remember that it was you they clicked through from in Twitter,
right,
as much as you know the topic that was interesting to them.
Mm-hmm.
You can still have that conversation. Now, in LinkedIn, if they read it, I think there's a greater chance they'll remember your name.
Right.
Because LinkedIn doesn't move at the pace of a Twitter.
Correct.
I just want to make that point, because a lot of reps, when they follow up on leads that come from what we would call campaigns, are expecting that the prospect will remember them, will remember the company, will remember what they read. And if you think about how quickly you read things, they may not remember exactly who wrote it or where it came from.
Mm-hmm.
So the key takeaway is, going back to the personas, now you know what to talk with them about or what you want to reach out to them about, whichever method you're using.
Right.
And to your point, it's much more targeted when we do that, and we have a higher likelihood of reaching them, as mm-hmm. long as we're confident when we call that it doesn't throw us off if they don't remember our name.
Exactly. Exactly. That's great advice. I have a question about the fact that you help sales teams with prospecting and you help the marketing side with lead gen. When you create that MQL, are you also watching it flow through the pipeline to an opportunity? Are you actually, do you ever engage again when that lead is getting to close but didn't close and needs to come back in for nurture? Or are you focused mostly top of funnel, generating the MQL, and do not normally get involved with the nurture sequence of, or side of things?
We get involved with the nurture sequence as well. And we look at it as there are different actions that you need to take depending on where a prospect, what I say, is falls out of the sales process.
Leaks out. Yep.
Right. If it leaks out, where that is how you want to attempt to get them re-engaged again.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we look at the top of the funnel, and then we really do want to see it go all the way through to close. There's so many exciting things you can do, Mary Lou, to keep prospects engaged. Even when they're fully engaged with the sales rep, there are some exciting things that you can do to get that prospect even more interested or see more value even beyond what the rep is doing. So it's pretty exciting, like all the different ways that you can use the lead generation strategies of today.
Yeah. And I think that you hit the nail on the head. That's the one area where I'm sure people sitting in the audience are thinking, once I'm in getting to close world, I sort of turn off my lead gen process. I don't really think about nurture, but we have data that shows that someone can come through the pipeline 3, 4, 5 times before they make that buying decision. And if you let them go and don't nurture, you are just kind of taking money and throwing it out the window.
Exactly. And why would you not support your sales team just because it's become an opportunity?
Yeah.
And it's now in the sales rep's hands.
Mm-hmm.
Why would you not nurture that prospect while they're in the sales pipeline? Why would you not have them come to your webinars or send them interesting content while the sales rep is talking to them?
Right. Truth be told, how many of your clients have actually taken it to that level and use that as a strategy? For every 10 clients, how many actually do that?
I would say 1/10.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Because they don't see the value. We actually had a client turn it off.
Wow.
And we said to him, do you realize how many prospects you have in your pipeline going through this? And his comment was, I don't like that it's telling me I need to call people at a certain time.
Spoken like a true account executive.
Like, oh my gosh, here we are. You know, your contact is engaged, done all these things, and now it pops up that it's time for you to call. How much warmer do you want someone to be? So
yeah.
We find only those companies that are operationally mature in their sales process are the ones that see the true value of using campaigns during the actual sales process.
Wow.
They're all focused at the top of the funnel, Mary Lou. All they want to do is get more leads. Give me more leads. Give me more leads. Instead of, wait a minute, we got the lead. We did all that hard work. How about we win the lead?
Yes. And you know, the numbers are staggering. I've been tracking this because, you know, this is what I do. And we've increased the close rates from the standard and sometimes doubled and tripled the close rates when we institute a nurturing program in the bottom of the funnel.
Yes.
And the beauty of this, think about this. So our lead gen is a rocket ship, and it's still, we can turn it on to produce 2x if we want. So if we, produce more quality opportunities through our top of funnel lead gen, and B, increase the close rates at our bottom of funnel lead gen, what does that tell you? Revenue, revenue, revenue.
Growth. Yep. Margin, even.
I know. And we have the tools in place to do this nurturing, people. It's there. We use it at top of funnel. Why would we not try this? Do you have favorite spots in the bottom of funnel where you like? I know there's a million methodologies of getting to closed, but are there certain spots where you can see the value of not only close rates, but velocity, pipeline velocity, things close faster? Is there a favorite spot that you like to start clients with?
Yes, prior to the proposal.
Okay.
So they are not receiving the proposal yet, but you start to nurture them and really get them excited
right
before you give them the proposal. And then another favorite spot is after the proposal, especially if you're in a competitive situation.
Mm-hmm.
So you stay in front of them, because oftentimes once you've delivered the proposal, a prospect may say, well, I've got two other companies I'm talking to, or we need to think about it, or we have to go to the board, or you've heard them all. And then the rep often will sit back and say, okay, and wait. And so there's silence until the rep reaches out and says, so, hey, have you had that board meeting, or did you guys get together? So before the proposal to create the excitement, and then after the proposal to stay in front of them are
okay.
the two that we see will make a big difference.
Right. Yeah, that's great advice. And, you know, I love the example of the math of, okay, if I have $100 opportunity and I've got, you know, basically the reps, I close two of those. I have 100 people, I close two of them, or sorry, 10 people, close two of them, $100 each. That's, you know, two times 100 is $200. If I increase the close rate to four, then now I've just doubled my take home. But if I do that plus focus on Legion at top of funnel and put 200 more people or 100 more people in and increase the close rates, then it's just, the math is just so easy to see that it, and it costs us nothing because we've already put in the engine to do this automated or personalized, but this consistent touch, this consistent rhythm. And all we need to do is build playlists for prior to proposal and after proposal. We build another little playlist that gets them, you know, engaged with our, now they're really into understanding more about the product. So it's even easier to put that content together, because usually marketing has a ton of content for that level of awareness. And they don't usually have the content available for top of funnel, because we're trying to, you know, build a sense of urgency and make people aware that we're out there, you know. So it's it just boggles the mind. But I'm glad that you're on top of that, Kendra.
Yes, we are. It's an interesting conversation with clients so that they can understand what that real value is.
Yeah.
Because they're so focused on the lead generation.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. I totally get it. And my wish for all of you listening right now is that the light bulb has gone on and that you really look at this as an additional way to love your clients, love your prospects, get them to love you, get them to trust you more. You know, this handholding during the cycle is an indicator of how well they're going to be taken care of when they are a client of yours. So this is also building loyalty. It's building lifetime value, the sort of softer benefits of doing these types of campaigns, mid and bottom of funnel. So yay. I'm glad you're focused on that. We don't write about it very often either. Do you write about it a lot and talk to people about it a lot, Kendra?
I talk with people about it frequently. I don't write about it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't write about it.
Yeah, I haven't read a lot about it either, because we are focused on the prospecting and we are focused on getting to close, but not the rhythm of getting to close and that work ethic or habit. I don't even know how to describe it, but it's, you know, we're the follow-up engines at the top of funnel. So we're taking that follow-up engine mentality, but just oozing it with value as we touch into the getting to close part of the funnel. Why not? Let's do it. I'd love that.
I do.
So what's on the agenda for you now? What are your goals coming up once we get out of the abyss of staying at home?
Well, for us, it's exciting to see how our clients are shifting some of their solutions.
Mm-hmm.
And so helping them get that message out as they are shifting and allowing them to continue it to be successful. So that's part on the lead generation side. And then on the sales side, A big piece that we're doing is linking what happens with a marketing qualified lead when it goes to sales and why is it not closing. So we're taking a deeper look at what's hindering a sales rep from closing a higher percentage of those leads from a skills perspective.
Nice.
And we're starting to link what, before we even do their lead generation, where they may have challenges mm-hmm. within the sales team when a lead is passed. So
yes.
It's not just, here's a lead, go call it. That's partly what I was explaining before about how, you know, reps will have a separate expectation when they get that lead. And they may handle it differently because they feel like, oh, a person should know me, so they should take my call. So what we're starting to do is before that lead ever passes, look at the sales team and say, are they ready? And if they're not, what has to be fixed in the process or the systems or the skills themselves? So that's
nice.
Where we're headed.
Good. Yeah, we have similar goals. We're really trying to understand recycled leads, closed, lost leads, or leakage at top of mm-hmm. funnel. Even if we don't reach the people that came in, we're looking at those workflows and see if there's, you know, maybe we should change the channel among the channels around. But I guess the delivery here and the message here and the lesson here is that we're constantly measuring and testing mm-hmm. and constantly iterating and making this thing better. It's never a set it and forget it. That's why it's nice to hear that there are people like Kendra's group out there to help us not only hone the message, but also the process of the message and the delivery of the message so that we can continually eke out percent improvement over the long haul, because yield, which is the conversion rate, lag, which is the cycle time, and the average deal size are what makes things predictable. And that's what we're trying to do here, is build market share in some cases, or product share if you're working with the base. But that formula is the formula we're striving for. Kendra, thank you so much for your time today. How is the best way that people can reach you? Where do we go to find
through
you?
Through our website is the best way, because we have all our resources as well. So klagroup.com. Contact us through there.
All right. And I will make sure on your page that I'll put all these links. And that there's a ton of information out there, folks, on Kendra on the internet. So just type her name, K-E-N-D-R-A, I bet, and prospecting. And you've got it.
There you go.
Thanks again. Very much appreciate your time.
Thank you for having me.